Okay, all right. So jump shift, this is another bunch of work. I helped run the, well, I did basically run the spectrum policy working group. And one of the big issues in this space here is if we are moving to all these kinds of new technologies, a lot of them being wireless, can we move the model in the future of sort of spectrum towards a new way of managing spectrum so that we can get out of what we are still doing, which is basically managing spectrum the way we did when we first created it, and was, you know, have certain dedicated assignments and this legacy stuff. So the problem is that everybody wants more spectrum. Some people think, you know, very much it's sort of the modality of it's commercial broadband, and there's a bunch of other users that are low value, government over-the-air television, and we should just take spectrum away from them and give it to commercial broadband. That won't solve the challenge that commercial broadband has, and it, you know, doesn't meet the fact that, like, government users, they need a lot more spectrum. If you look at, like, for example, what the Department of Defense views of the future battlefield, what they need to do. If you talk to people that want to do things like remote sensing, the astronomers are constantly finding new frequency bands that they would like to be able to sense in. Everybody wants more spectrum. It's not just about communications. It is also about sensing. There's a lot more that can happen in that way, especially in sort of new models of security, things like geofencing, et cetera. It's all different kinds, high-low power, wide area, local, planned and ad hoc networking. And all these different kinds of networks have very, very different sorts of usage models. The people that are pushing these are coming from different, very different parts of the value chain and very different communities, and they have very different ideas about what's the right kind of way they want to interact with spectrum. You know, we've had these two paradigm models that people want to argue as if there's licensed and there's unlicensed, but there's all different kinds of flavors of unlicensed, there's different flavors of licensed, and there's all kinds of models in between. So when you think about sort of sharing spectrum, there are lots of ways to do it, and we do it in lots of ways, in different ways. So for example, cellular operators that operate in exclusively licensed spectrum and television broadcasters, they're sharing their spectrum. They view themselves as sharing their spectrum amongst their customers, and that is a model. You assign the resource to a single person, they build a network, they figure out how to provision for a bunch of different subscribers. Wi-Fi is obviously a totally different way of sharing spectrum. You basically uncoordinated access points. TV white space is another model. Ultra wide band is another model. There's portion of the 5 gigahertz spectrum where you can do dynamic frequency selection. You listen before talk so that you can, if you have radios up there, you can coexist with radars. And now the one that a lot of this talk is informed by is what's going on at the 3.5 gigahertz band, which has been designated for sort of small cells. And they're proposing this three-tiered sharing model. They can't get the government out of the spectrum, so they're figuring out how can they layer in two classes of commercial users into this spectrum. And the commercial users are what they call priority access, think licensed users who will pay to basically have access to spectrum and interference protection, and unlicensed users who will use the spectrum when it's available, either because the incumbent users don't require it or because the priority access users don't require it. So that's a model. And how are they going to do this? How are they going to manage these three different tiers? They have this vision of doing a spectrum access system. And a lot of this talk is thinking about the spectrum access system as a paradigm for what the future management framework ought to be. The goal is that if we want to make spectrum management flexible, we want to basically be able to support multiple classes of users and usage rights and be able to change those over time and at a clock cycle that is not like the kind of clock cycle that's embedded in the current regulatory process. It could be as fast as like real market, you know, real time, you know, a radio comes in, fire, you know, lights, public safety says, I need a bunch of spectrum in this area and basically kicks everybody else off and gets what it needs. Or it could be that the government says for the next 2 years, the spectrum's going to be, you know, limited license, but then it's going to be open and a free-for-all, and that I've sort of built in ways to sort of update it. What does a model like that look like? Well, if you look in the upper left-hand of this, that picture there, that's the picture of the frequency chart that people always, you know, trund out there to basically explain to you why spectrum sharing is such a bloody mess. Because there's all these different sorts of rules, it's cut up by different bands, it's all kind of layered. That is a spectrum access system. It's just not a good one because it's static, it's inflexible, and it's uninformative. So what we would like to do is build something more like what's down this lower picture, and this is from one of the slide decks where people were actually talking about what the spectrum access system for the 3.5 gigahertz band should look like. And it's this database that people would feed in information about, you know, what things you can use in what territories, what frequencies are there, and the different players would be able to feed stuff in at different time scales, and there might be sensing that would feed into this. So you'd have some much more richer infrastructure to support much more dynamic management, to allow you to modify how the spectrum's being used and the rules by which it's being used on a more dynamic basis, and that you could then do much better matching of supply and demand on a more granular basis in time, space. That's the principal focus today, so that I could have relatively small territories that could say, okay, this frequency is available here, and then if you were over here, maybe it wouldn't be. And it's available now, but maybe it won't be a little bit later. But also on some sort of context basis. So for example, there are three tiers of users. But if there's three tiers of users, why not four, five, six, if you wanted to? So that you could sit there and use this to, as a framework for transitioning. And it also would then give you sort of more timely policy debate. So for example, right now, to roll this out, I can't get people to agree on what's the right way to model exclusion zones, for example. I can sit there and say, okay, we're going to use this model of exclusion zones today. It could be worst case. But we're going to go do all these studies. And when these studies come out and show that we can do better than that and identify more nuanced models, then we can just update this database system. And then those new exclusion zones would basically announce the permissions to different users that need to query the database about what spectrum was available. And that this whole framework, you know, the ability to collect the data, figure out how it's actually being used, and over multiple bands, would allow us to do sort of collective learning as to what kind of management we really need. This framework has been sort of specified and writ large and is embedded in these 3.5 rules, but there are lots and lots of details that haven't been worked out. We still don't really understand fully what the interference protection models ought to be from a technical point of view, and even less from an economic point of view. We don't have a definition that people agree on what constitutes, quote, harmful interference. We don't know or have agreement on how dynamic the SAS should be and who should control it. So, you know, who gets to put what data in and take what data out? There's a ton of security and privacy issues that come up in this. And there's an expectation that there's not going to be a single SAS, there'll be multiple SASs, and there's going to be this sort of race to the top. So these SASs will, the best of them will sort of inspire the other SASs to get better. And how exactly that's going to work is a really interesting question. And there's sort of a lot there that needs to be sorted out. I had earlier commented in this proceeding, one of the questions that came up was, if a priority access user buys the license for interference protection in a particular area, could an unlicensed user operate in that same territory? And I said, you know what, we should interpret the license as actually an option, a financial security, where basically there'd be two payments. There'd be a payment to acquire the license and the protection, which you get. The SAS says you get interference protection. If you want to exclude unlicensed users because you don't trust the SAS for whatever reason, then you could exercise your option, okay? And there's lots of problems about how that would work, and I kind of threw it out there to sort of generate discussion. But in further thinking, and in a paper that explains this more, I've come to the conclusion it's really important to separate the exclusion right and the interference protection. A lot of people focus on the fact that the only reason that we should do spectrum management, spectrum policy, is because of interference protection. That's the only sort of real policy justification for it. That, I think, I think there's a lot of merit to that argument. The problem is, that's just not the way it's done, and we can't get there from here right now. Spectrum policy is used to promote broadband. It's used for a whole lot of other things. It's used to define market shares. When they sit there and they say, okay, we want to have a mobile industry here. We want these cellular providers. They figure out how many mobile providers they want and how much they have to allocate to each of them. And even if you wish you could get their hands out of that, you could say, I could manage the sharing. There's a technical solution to this. You can't get people to agree. If you think about basically the spectrum, and the access to the spectrum and the management of it is managing different sorts of rights of different classes of users, that's a sort of well-defined class of problems in economics. And, you know, it comes to this question about what are common goods versus what are private property. And the sort of more recent evolving one view is that basically, you know, there's other things besides just private and public property. There's also what they call common pool resources. And in fact, everything is on a continuum that you can sort of use common pool resource thinking to think about. Eleanor Ostrom, who sort of is known for writing about common pool resources, things like fisheries and stuff like that, won the Nobel Prize in economics for sort of belatedly for sort of explaining to people that really there isn't any good that's a pure private good or a pure public good. Everything's kind of in between. Some things that are more like public goods have these sort of special problems that people think about managing like a commons. But that framework is the right way to think about it. And there's a ton of sort of legal thinking, economic thinking about why you want to exclude. And in fact, you know, there's a number of authors that say sort of you can't even talk about property rights without talking about exclusion right. So if we actually just separate these two, if you separate, the other problem is the interference protection, right? You got all these sort of models here, and I won't even try and understand exactly what this are. But basically, there's lots of different ways you can talk about what kind of technical coexistence could happen and what would allow people to operate. The problem is when you put these two things together, you end up having these economic arguments in the context of these technical arguments, and that's bad for the policy process. That's the reason you want to really try and separate them. If, for example, you had a band, and the only reason someone was taking the exclusion right was to get themselves the interference protection they really needed, then if the SAS was giving them that interference protection already, then they wouldn't need to basically have this exclusion right. And if it's an additional right, presumably they're paying something more for it. And so if they're using that, then it gives you a way to sort of separate those arguments and basically hold people's feet to the fire and get them to be honest. So summing up, the future's going to be shared spectrum in lots and lots of ways. We can't get out of the legacy world we live in immediately. We have these ideas of what kind of new models might work, but they're not the end of the story. There's going to be future new models because there's going to be new entrants, new ways of thinking about this, and we ought to try and build a regulatory process that's robust to that, and so that we can adapt the process as all the different components of it change. And that each time we change the nature of the sharing regimes, we change the nature of the definition of the property rights. Commons, private property, pools, clubs, all of these are just different sorts of property rights regimes, and they all have slightly different implications of what enforcement's going to look like, how you would govern it, and each time you change that sort of allocation of the fundamental rights, you're going to change these other things, you're going to need to make adjustments. The notion of the SAS, building this database, allowing people to communicate, trying to build this ecosystem that can update and use real data and learn, using the technology in a way that can be integrated with the industry structure, is the right model. But you can't just, it's not sort of like you design it. Like Google right now has its vision of a SaaS. It's battling some of the other people that are pushing their versions of a SaaS. I think there's a lot of wasted effort in them not trying to talk a little bit better about this. I think we can view the SaaS as a common pool resource governance framework. And one of the papers I talk about goes into that in some more detail. And that by separating the exclusion and the interference protection rights, what we get is we recognize sort of in some sense explicitly there's other things that could be going on in these rights regimes and that we have to deal with other than just interference protection. And we recognize explicitly in our debates that interference protection is always about an economic argument, but instead of arguing the economics, you know, indirectly through these technical models, like come in and say, oh, it has to be worst case, you know, modeling because otherwise, you know, my planes are going to drop out of the air, you know, we can actually sort of talk about these in a way where we can actually get better evidence-based decision making. And so let me stop there.
Great.